From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 300 with guest Mark Manassi, recorded Monday, January 14th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon, and thank you, listener, for tuning in to Run As Radio. It's episode 300. So I'm actually at home for a few days, and I got a chance to record this the traditional way, and I pulled in my friend Mark Manassi to have a chat with us about, you know, what does it mean to do 300 episodes and what really matters today. Thank you, Mark.
Is it really 300, Richard? I mean, you're a good guy and everything, but, you know, you Canadians can be shady sometimes. What number base did you use when you came up with the 300 number?
Oh, that clearly it's a metric count of shows, which is why it's base 10.
So it's a three-killer show. Sorry, three-hecta-show. Three-hecta-show, that's it, yes.
Deca. I think we go with deca show, but okay.
No. Hecta. Hectometers are 100 meters. Hectometers? I learned that in metric back in the 20th century when America was going to become metric. We wanted to, we like our position now as a country that lines up next to Burkina Faso and Myanmar. So we're the only ones left.
Well, you know, the UK is sort of half and half. Really, Canada's half and half. You know, most of our packaging has grams and ounces on it. You know, other than the speed signs, you couldn't really tell.
You know, you only say that because you're old. If you were like 13, and I were to say, yeah, I just bought a house, it's like a 2-acre lot, I bet that would be a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, no, acres have fallen by the wayside. They're gone.
Yes, they have.
Not that anybody knows what a hectare is either.
Hectares are about 3 acres. So the easy way to think of it is that if you're an American translating, if you're a 10-acre lot's about 3 and some hectares.
In other words, big.
I have a blog post on this. I have a totally non-technical blog post, and one is about like 5 pages on how to speak metric if you're American. That there's little easy tips on from one to the other. No, I swear to God, I've been thinking a lot about it because I travel a lot, you know, and I'm very old, 55, and so you know I've got you know English baked into my brain, but it's funny how it's become something. I don't want to burn up our time too much, but I mean, it's funny how it's become something that distances you, because well, you know this because we both travel a lot.
Yeah,
you know if we're in England or Ireland. We can use English units and everything's fine. You know, yep. I mean, some people might look at us a little funny. If you're in Turkey, you know, they're very nice people, but they're straining. They're like, oh, crap, I think I read about that in some ancient book or something like this, you know.
And the temperature one's the interesting part, too, because while Celsius is incredibly sensible, in the temperature range that really matters, which is room temperature, it's not granular enough.
That's exactly right. Is that I love Celsius in a lot of ways, but you're right. The fact that essentially... 2 degrees Fahrenheit is about 1 degree Celsius, and I know that's not right, but it's close enough for government work. And,
yep.
But you know, I when I got started teaching ages and ages ago, I want to say about 28 years ago, I was in Montreal, which is a beautiful, beautiful town. Love Montreal, and I was there with the marketing director of KLM at the time. For some reason, he decided to take a "What are PCs all about?" class or whatever, and he was you know spending a few months TDY in Montreal. This old German guy. And I said, yeah, metric, it's hard to get my, I love most of it, but it's hard to get my handle on centigrade. And he says, oh, it's very easy, you know? 0 is freezing. 10, you need a jacket. 20 is comfortable. 30 is warm. 40 is very warm. So and ever since, that's like done the job for me. You know? Most Americans do not know that the reason when you buy a hot tub, its maximum temperature is 104 degrees, which you, as a good metric guy, know is 40 degrees Celsius. And that 98.6 isn't 98.6. It's just that it works out to the exact value in some Celsius value. But anyway, we digress. Speaking of change.
You have been absorbed in Server 2012, and clearly your curriculum has gotten out of control. What are you up to now, 5 days?
Well, Well, the server class was a whole lot of fun, and I had thought from a business point of view that really, if I could just pound people's heads for 3 days, then that would be great. But I think, as I think about it, times are still tough no matter what the governments are saying. We're still in sort of a recession. So doing a three-day class, I think, would be a burden on my customers. So I'm just going to talk faster and not take questions. And so I've got lots and lots of stuff, there. And I've been meaning to do a Windows 8 thing, but I've been so busy because the Server 2012 story is so good. It's like,
yes, it is.
Windows 8's a bit of a mixed bag, but Server 2012 in general is pretty gosh darn cool. The little Metro interface on it is kind of ridiculous. But, once you get past that part, once you learn a few Windows keys to get past it, it's a pretty good story. Windows 8, in contrast, is pretty interesting. I got to ask you, are you living Windows 8? If I ran into you in an airport, would you have a Windows 8 tablet or something like that?
I've got a Surface RT.
Oh, Surface RT. Okay, me too. How are you liking
it? My old UX31 still hasn't been upgraded yet. I was going to flip it to the older daughter and get one of the touchscreen tablets from Asus for it, and I'm waiting for those to be available.
You wussy. So you have a Windows 7 laptop, and
yep.
You didn't go, you didn't decide to just go Windows 7?
Why upgrade that machine when I'm about to give it up?
Well, so what I did was I was hoping to avoid Windows 8. On the desktop, just because if you don't have a touchscreen, it's a crazy idea. But what I did was on launch day, on October 26th,
right?
You could give Microsoft $36 or something like that, and they would handle the whole upgrade for you. And I thought, this is my job. I talk about this stuff. Let me do what the regular people do. And I have this Lenovo laptop that I've had for the last 2 years that's got a million pieces of applications on it, lots of weird hardware, all kinds of drivers. And I thought, I am going to try this. And so I did. And we did this in-place upgrade while I was waiting. In-place upgrade from Windows 7 with all kinds of applications and junk. And it was actually pretty flawless, except for one thing. The web page is saying in big letters that your data will be unaffected, you won't lose any apps, etc.
Right.
But when the wizard comes up, it asks you a question and gives you three radio buttons for options, like, what should I do? And one of the radio buttons is, don't lose any of my data. And the other one's like, keep my data, but forget the apps. And one radio button, the default, says, wipe everything, lose everything, build it from scratch. So, if you've been lulled into a false sense of security at the beginning of a bad day at the office. But I clicked the right one. It took it about, I want to say, 40 minutes. And, I lost almost, not. I didn't lose anything. I had one or two drivers I had an issue with, but I've gotten them straightened out. It said go to the new VM where I was going to do that anyway. And it really wasn't bad. And the interesting part was this, was that having feared working on Windows 8 with a non-touchscreen system, once you get the Windows key down and the Windows D and all that kind of stuff,
yeah.
I was sitting there working on something, and 2 hours into it, I realized that I'd forgotten. That's the great thing about Windows 8, is that it can be hidden enough that you don't remember you have it. So the best thing I can say about Windows 8 is that it is mostly harmless and that it becomes innocuous, quickly.
Yeah, and definitely if you're a shortcut key guy, if you're used to just typing the names of stuff, you don't even notice it. The screen does a little weird flip, and then you're back into your app.
And if you do too much of that, I think there's a new syndrome, and I got to name it. It's called DIMS. It's called
DIMS?
Desktop-Induced Motion Sickness. But I've been trying to come up with a word for it, but I think it's I call it the amphibious desktop. Amphibious because, as amphibians are creatures that just recently evolved from being gills and stuff like that and coming up with the land, but they can't seem to eliminate that attachment to the old days.
They just want to be a little moist.
Just a little moist, yeah. So although there are some amphibians that are pretty adventurous about that, those toads, they don't.
Yeah.
So, and that's... let's think about some good news. And so here it is. It's 3 months afterwards, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about 3 months after October release, whenever it was.
Yeah, more
so
or less.
We're smart Windows guys. Can we step back and come up with some sort of, now that we have perspective, kinds of stuff on it? So let's start up. Let me do a positive one, okay?
Okay.
Other than innocuous.
Yeah, harmless is not a great sales strategy.
I updated it recently. It's mostly harmless.
Nice.
Here's an interesting thing, is that if you want to update to Windows 8, seriously, let me take it beyond harmless. There are some nice things about Windows 8. you know, the file history things and a number of other things, and having access to what I'm going to call metro applications, or some people call them modern applications now, Windows Store applications, the official phrase. But
yeah,
some guy at Microsoft who comes up with the dumbest names he can possibly have for important stuff, and it's he's still working. He's still firing on all 12 cylinders. Windows
somehow
Store applications.
They should have made a deal for Metro. Metro was a good name.
You know, the thing is, though, you're dealing with Germans, and it's like the German Walmart, you know? So that would be, you know, but, you, no, absolutely. What's wrong with downtown or uptown or, I don't know, you know, something along those lines, but, you know, or metropolis, you know, the metropolis. Yeah, yeah, they should have done something like that, because it was a nice, sexy name, but they managed to muff that one.
And I do appreciate the idea of, you know, what I like about that RT is handing them to family members who normally call me for tech support, because as long as they can only install apps via the store, they can only get in so much trouble.
Don't they ever have to do things like find out why the USB stick that they plugged in doesn't work? And that takes them back to the desktop.
It's just a question of whether they're ever going to actually plug a USB stick in.
Okay. Okay, could be. I had a little trouble with my Surface Box. It ran for a while, and then it just kind of fritzed out. You could turn it on, and nothing would happen, but if you pushed that little Windows key, the embedded in the glass thing, it would kind of buzz, so you'd know it was there, but you couldn't really get in. It was kind of locked-in syndrome.
Hmm.
And I tried booting off a WinPE stick until I realized that that was a really stupid thing for me to do, since I didn't have an Intel processor in the box.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
But the Microsoft guys were very good. I just, you know, brought it into a little pop-up store, not the one that I bought it from. And they said, did you do this? Did you do this? I said, I even built the recovery USB stick, and that didn't work. And they said, the what? I said, oh, so. How many times do you call tech support? And I'm going to ask this of everybody who's listening to this program.
Sure.
How many times do you call tech support, you have a three-minute conversation with them, and you realize, uh-oh.
I'm talking to the wrong guy. My favorite tech support call, I was having problems with one of my ISP, kept wiping out my reverse DNS entries. Just kept wiping them out over and over again. And I was trying to run a mail server. I now proxy all that stuff and so forth anyway. And you really need reverse entries. It's important.
Absolutely.
So I call tech support to get the reverse DNS entries put back in. And my rule was, if I said, hey, I need my reverse DNS entries fixed, if the guy said, what's your IP address, I would hang up. Because that's exactly the opposite question he should ask. It should be, what's your URL? So it's like, okay, you don't know what you're talking about. Moving on. And it was like 1 in 10 guys even knew what a reverse IP was.
Which is astounding. It truly is. I may have told you this story before, but I'm still trying to get my cable provider to give me a block of IPv6 addresses. And at this point, I just call now and then just to find out what answer I'm going to get. And the first level never has any idea. The second level has no idea. The third level has the random excuse generator. And my favorite was when this guy sort of typed away for a while. He said, well, you know, Mr. Benassi, I don't think you realize, but IPv6 is only used by the military. Okay. You know, so it's moments like that that you want to say, are there any big people there, son? Can I speak to your daddy?
To one of the adults?
It just doesn't work at all, you know. But here's the exciting thing about Windows 8 is that it's astounding how much hardware will run this. Like if you have a laptop that you bought in 2007,
sure,
that was a little jazzy for the time. You know, I'm going to say I like 4 gigabytes of RAM for it. It'll do it in 2. And if you've got 2 gigahertz processor, I mean, even a single core guy, it'll run Outlook. It'll run IE. You know, so if you just want to play Windows 8, then you can do that. Now, Windows 8, that's the good news. You know, the bad news is the reason you didn't upgrade is because, you know, the Windows 8 experience really lacks if you don't have touch hardware.
Sure.
Really a lot, and so this kind of saddens me because my friend Kathleen is in the market for a new laptop. And, you know, if you want to carry around one of those laptops that's about, 5 pounds, and it's got a real keyboard, you can put 16 gigs of RAM in it if you really want to and stuff like that. You know, it has an optical drive. You can't get those with a touchscreen. I mean, you'll be able to eventually, I guess.
Yeah, but right now, the touchscreens that are coming out are the Ultrabooks.
14-inch 1366 by 768, which drives you and me crazy because we want to run virtual machines. And a server virtual machine's got to run 1024 by 768 unless you're very, very patient and like scrolling a lot. And so it's kind of a shame. It really is. It's that, you know, we're sort of going backwards in some ways. And yet, maybe it's just a temporary thing, but the Microsoft guys and a lot of hardware vendors sort of have this straight face when they say, oh, that's no problem. We'll sell you a Windows 8 computer that's got a 15.86-inch screen or a 17-inch screen. And what we have is, I forget what they call it, but you know what used to be the little mouse touchpad, the thing that will drive you crazy that's sitting on the front of your computer? Now,
yep.
I hate those things because, for me, I'm a touch typer, which means I'm not looking when I'm typing. And I have apparently a big palm heel. The heel of my palm must be bigger. Maybe I just don't know how to type right. Because I'll strike it, and it will, while I'm not looking, it will mark two paragraphs as being a block of data, and the next press I key deletes that entire paragraph. And the next thing I know, I'm like, how did this happen?
Where did my copy go?
There are two paragraphs in my 2001 or 2003 Linux book that make no sense at all, and I know exactly how they did it, that WinBook, you know. Now, modern laptops let you turn the blasted thing off, and then I'll just use the little touch point or a mouse or an arc mouse or something like that. But people, you know, the Microsoft, I mean, it's nice that Microsoft gave us the ability, if you have a really big mousy, touchy pad, that you can do some swipey stuff as if you were swiping the screen.
Yeah, and I actually got one of the Logitech pads for Christmas. I'm going to probably put on my big dev machine, and it's got all of the multi-gesture stuff, and you can, you know, I'm thinking about build that machine now with Win 8, and that's the 4960 by 1600 display, the monster display that currently needs a rollerball because no mouse pad is big enough. So I'm going to see if I can make the touchpad actually work that span.
I'd love to hear about it because I've played with some of it because you can download drivers from the Synaptics guys or whatever else that if you've got one of these, you know, I don't know, 3-inch by 2-inch kind of mouse paddy things. You can make it do it. But I don't know. The idea that I'm looking up at the screen while my fingers are moving down below, it's hard to imagine running an iPad like that. You know, it's kind of like saying, okay, hold the iPad up over here and I'm just going to make some swipes on the table and we'll see what happens. It's just
the iPad doesn't get that big. I want more screen space. And you can set up Windows 8 so that it shows where your fingertip is landing on the screen while you're down on the pad.
No. There's no questions about it. It's just, I don't know. I have a disconnect with it.
Can we get it to natural? Because I don't want to touch these big screens. Not only not touch screens, they're a long way away.
Yeah, you know, that's absolutely true, but I do. That is one thing, is that because I've got the RT box, which does have a great little touch screen, I've become totally addicted to, and I already had the iPad, I've become totally addicted to touch. And here's one of the things that I love about it, is that, because, you know, I do command line-y stuff, a lot of PowerShell and all that kind of stuff. If you have a command line window open where you've got a scroll bar on it because it's way too large to fit on the screen, the fact that I can just touch anywhere in that command line and just scroll and flick up and down, like, that's all I needed. I didn't need a Metro app. I didn't need a little news app. I didn't need a little weather app. Being able to touch the screen and flip up and down in my command prompt windows, that was it.
Well, and I'm wondering if touch is even a temporary step. I'm looking at some of the, I'm not even thinking about Kinect, but it's like Leap Motion. There's a couple others that are starting to make really precise 3D motion sensing that could do everything touch can do and more.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. No, I look forward to taking one of my projectors and just mounting it on the ceiling of one of my offices and just project the screen onto the wall, and then I can just stand up and move my arms around like I'm controlling the NCC 1701R or something like that and do the whole Kinect thing. You know, special glasses too, right? You know, once the Google glasses come out, they'll also be able to see where my retina is, or rather where my pupil is. So I'll just kind of look and blink. And
actually, I've seen a great eye tracker that they even mounted on a laptop that is, you know, totally in realms, that it was able to see where you were looking on the screen because it's basically shining an infrared light in your eye and then looking at the changes in the angle of your iris because your iris reflects IR differently than the rest of your eye. So it's doing it at distance.
Yeah.
It's doing it laptop distances.
It's an interesting question because, you know, as you get older, the amount that your pupil can get larger gets significantly smaller.
Right.
So I wonder if it'll work on folks in their 40s. Let's talk about another thing. Now, you said you liked the store, the Windows Store.
Yep.
I understand what you're saying, but it bothers me a lot that, you know, on the one hand, Microsoft sells me the operating system, and then they say, we figure you're so dumb that we won't let you buy any of those apps by yourself. You got to buy them from us. So
right.
Or you get the money from that. And we get to choose whether you can buy it or not. It's the whole Apple, you know, first of all, it's patronizing. It bothers me that I can't download an app and stick it on my own computer. There's something very, very scary, 1984-ish, that just I don't like about it. That's A. And B is, because they've got this monopolistic control of the applications I have, oh, by the way, they get to charge 30% for it. There's just something really wrong. I mean,
but at the same time, they're also putting their stamp on, this is a safe piece of software.
By running a half dozen tests that you can download yourself and any idiot could run.
Except that actually most idiots won't run. Like, I mean, the reality is the approval process is kind of useful. And your friend and mine, I guess, is Mark Vucinovich, was on the show talking about this idea of white list is good, that now we have a set of approved apps rather than just sticking whatever we want in the machine and seeing if we can police them while they're there.
And that's why Mark writes a lot of his own applications, and since he has some certificate, then he can whitelist himself. So, you know, love Mark as I do. I mean, the fact is, I think that there should be a way for me to say, I'm awake, adult, sober, and over the age of 21, and I've downloaded this Metro app that, I don't know, spins spirals on the screen or something like that, and I hereby aver that I'm a big kid, you know? I mean, I understand that one can say that there is a certain positive value to the nanny state or whatever we want to say. But given a little time, it becomes evil. And look,
as long as it's creating friction, it's going to be a problem.
Would you know Vucinovich's name if that existed in the DOS world? If Microsoft had been able to keep us from running DOS applications that it didn't want us to run, would you even know Mark's name?
I'm with you. He certainly made his name cleaning up the messes of badly behaved software.
Doing a great job building some of the best tools ever. I mean, uncovering some truly horrendous security holes that Microsoft steadfastly ignored until he wrote some code to demonstrate that, look, this really is an issue. That couldn't have happened otherwise. So, I wonder how many budding geniuses, you know, won't have an application because Microsoft decides it can't be in the store. And this is not fantasy. This is not just a negative fantasy. Look at what's happened with the Apple apps. I mean, you don't have to do a lot of Googling or Binging to find people who had a perfectly good application, but Apple didn't like it for some reason.
Right. Well, and my hope here is that Microsoft is somewhat friendlier to developers than Apple is, because Apple seems to be openly hostile to them.
I guess I know very little about that. I really want to learn some, what is it, Objective-C, Rational-C, whatever the name of it is.
Objective-C.
Because I have some ideas from really good apps that when I have some free time. But I don't know, do they charge you for a developer kit, that sort of thing?
It's like Microsoft, it's $100, you know.
In the Microsoft world, you don't have to do anything. I mean, you can get an awful lot of stuff done with Visual Studio Express, right?
Sure, and you still need a $100 account to be able to upload your apps to the store.
Okay, right. No, what I'm thinking of is that, you know, back when OS 2 first came out, Microsoft and IBM were flogging it. If you wanted to build stuff, if you want to be one of the first on the block, as a matter of fact, if you want to do anything at all, you had to buy I can't remember what it's called, but anyway, it was you know, the OS 2 developer's kit. It was $2,000 or $3,000.
True for most game development. You want to build apps for the Xbox or the PS3 or things like that. It's big money.
Is it really? Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah.
That's a terrible shame. But I mean, that's kind of true in the sense that Visual Studio is an expensive product and probably worth every penny that you pay for it. But there is that option for the Express Edition. And again, I don't know, Richard, you'd know this better than I. Can I use the Express Edition of Visual Studio to build a Metro app?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, if Microsoft's giving me a glide path or a launch pad where I can say, all right, here's your language, here's some pretty good but not as good as they could be tools, screw around with the language, screw around with the objects, see if you can build something that's not terrible, and then you decide to invest some more money, that's not unreasonable. But again, the idea that your half-baked tools, that you can't just give them out to the world, I don't know. It troubles me. It really does. I mean, whenever I talk to smart guys like you about this, I mean, people in the business, then I say, well, you know, I mean, the story always comes down to, well, it protects me, my parents or my friends or something along those
right.
lines. But I think there's an awful lot of us that know what we're doing. And I don't know if it's a future I want to live in. But
we have successfully, you know, the choice is the Apple approach, where it's inherently protected, and there is the jailbreak option if you want to live in the gray world, as opposed to the Google option, where everything's gray, there's no particular controls, and we have significant problems.
Well, now, wait a minute. You guys all say that. When I wrote a column about this a while back. People say, oh, Android's so terrible. Android is the exact same world you've been living with a PC since August 11 of 1981. It's freedom. It's the ability to download and run whatever you want. Look, you know, if I go into a grocery store in the United States, there's a lot of really stupid things I could buy, things that are bad for me. But I get to make a choice. I mean, it's saying that Android is this big, scary place, it's the same as the PC world. It's and you know, I had to finish the column somehow, and I wanted to have something of an upbeat note. So I ended it with, you know, long live the Android world, where the air breathes free, and long live iOS, where the clock's always, where the trains always run on time. You know, I don't know. Maybe there should be a way to, maybe there's a way to make it optional. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I think that's exactly what's happened over in the Apple world with the jailbreaking, and it looks like it's going to happen in the WinRT space as well. There's already, you know, hints and rumors floating around of guys who successfully broken it and thrown their own stuff on it. In fact, I think I saw a video clip of somebody running Android on a WinRT machine.
That'd be cool. And what's interesting, I was very heartened by the Microsoft response. Maybe it's because, you know, Sinofsky's gone, ding dong, the witch is dead, and or what? You know, I don't know what it is, but I found it really interesting that the Microsoft spokesperson said something like, hey, we welcome this, come on, you know? And I don't know whether they're saying that to say, help us make this a better prison, or whether they're saying, yeah, you know, we want a fan base, you know, as big as the rest of the world.
People innovating on your product is a good thing, period.
You and I know that. Not every large software operating system outfit knows this. And along those lines, let's consider another thing that worries me a bit. I can't get anyone to make this as an official reference, but I've heard from many, many people, and I've certainly heard from Microsoft people, that there's not going to be a service pack for Windows 8. Have you heard this?
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's the whole new model. We don't do service packs anymore because our code's so good.
Yikes.
Now, if that happens, that troubles me because, again, we talked about the, I forget if we were on air or off air, but USB 3 support. Let's be clear. I love the new hardware support in Windows 8. The fact that USB 3 is baked in the box. Yay! I'm never going back to Windows 7. The fact that the 4K native drives are supported. That's terrific. That's going to save us money. It's going to save you money when you're buying disk hardware. It's going to mean you have bigger disks. That is some absolutely great stuff. They continue to approve things along the lines of security hardware, the TPM2 stuff for connected standby, the UEFI, the UEFI BIOSes. That's some really, really, really positive stuff. Little things, but the accelerometer support and the near-field support, I mean, those are all absolutely, you know, really, really, really wonderful things. But let's be clear. This is the 1.0 version of the way we talk to USB. This is the 1.0 version of the way we know to talk to near-field. And again, I've not played with many near-field devices, but now, if any of our listeners don't know what we're talking about, the idea is I meet you in a coffee shop, and I want to do something like give you a file or share an app with you or something along those lines. We're not in the same domain. Our RT boxes couldn't join a domain if it wanted to anyway. You know, we may just be strangers passing the night. Well, how would we do that now? If it was a file, you'd get your USB stick, you'd find it in the bottom of your bag, and you'd root around and make sure there's nothing on the USB stick that you wouldn't want me to see, and you copy the file over, and then I shove it in, and all that sort of thing. And, you know, of course, we could do wireless, set up an ad hoc thing, but that's still a pain in the neck. And so the notion with near field is that if I'm going to communicate with you, your phone with mine, your phone with my RT or whatever, I essentially just kind of bump it. And so we have this thing where if we are physically close, it's kind of like if you have one of these newer cars that, not newer, last few years, with a little fob where you don't need to put a key in the car. The fact that you've got it sitting in your pocket means you're close enough to open the door and stuff like that. That's all interesting stuff, but it's a bit scary. I mean, if this near-field stuff isn't implemented properly, then as you or I are walking through an airport, and since you're going to a, you happen to be traveling very soon to a very large industrial country that has a tremendous amount of manufacturing, but doesn't care much about privacy or intellectual property, the idea that you walking through an airport could broadcast all kinds of stuff that you wouldn't want the rest of the world to see is kind of scary. So this, we do everything right, there's no service packs. I'm hoping that's just a really, really, you know, bad rumor. You know?
Yeah, maybe they're just going to call it something else.
Like a big-ass Patch Tuesday.
Right. Just regular updates. They happen every week.
It seems to. What is going on with that? It seems like I get Windows Update more than once a month these days.
Well, you know what's happened is instead of the regular Patch Tuesday, we've had a couple of real criticals that they've dropped immediately.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Essentially zero-day stuff, which is pretty... Yeah. Well, it's only been, what... next month, it'll be 11 years since Bill Gates woke up with his two big insights. One was that security is really important. This is like January 2002. Bill says, you know, my God, security is really important, and we're not good at it. And he said to everybody, stop writing code. And everybody had to spend 2 months learning Michael Howard's how to write secure stuff code. So for 2 months, no bugs came out of Redmond. That was interesting. And... It's been 11 years. You kind of think they would have gotten that stuff down by now.
Well, in a lot of ways, they have. These are the fixes to other people's code as well, right? Like, I appreciate the security group at Microsoft. They're very forthright. They're very fast.
Absolutely.
You know, compare that to Apple, who flatly ignored some vulnerabilities in the Mac for a couple of months.
Oh, God, yeah. More than that. Apparently, there's some incredibly huge stuff. They just need a Rusinovich.
Yeah, and that's inevitably coming. You know, as we all get older here, I'm getting more and more cognizant of the fact of if you make the App Store process too difficult, we'll jailbreak you. If you're not diligent about your vulnerabilities, you will be crucified publicly. Like, these things just go on. There are correct ways to handle this. The patterns are obvious. Do them or suffer the consequences.
And I'll take it a step further. This is an area that is not Windows, but near and dear to my heart, and that's intellectual property. And now for me and if the listeners, if you know me, I'm not going to say what you think. But, you know, for a long time, I made my living off, you know, videos and books and stuff like that. And so, you know, it's hard to write a good piece of work. It's hard to execute a good video, et cetera. And if people are stealing it, you're not making any money. And that means, you know, you're not going to be doing that stuff anymore. So I've always, this is something we still haven't solved. We don't really have a good way of doing electronic book DRM. I have a great book in my head. It's about 250 pages about PowerShell that I really want to write, and I will do it. But I wonder if I'll make any money off of it, because once it's electronic, it will be stolen. And that bothers me. And it bothers me that people have, I mean, how many petabytes, exabytes of stolen movies and stolen music and all that sort of stuff. And that stuff kind of bothers me. And I have to say, by the way, as a side point, big thing that happened to me in 2012 is that some of my audio sets that I've been selling for a while, there was a guy out of New York who was just taking them, copying them, and selling them, having taken my name off of it. Pretty brazen about it, too. Yeah. And I finally got the attention of the FBI, guy in Virginia and the FBI. Actually, the story he told was that he learned networking from my books, and so that's how I got his attention. Very, very helpful guy. I'm not sure I'm allowed to name names, so I'd like to, but, you know, shout out to you-know-who-you-are in the Virginia office. And so we went after these guys, and then when he was there, he found this guy was ripping off a bunch of other people as well. And so they put him away. He's going to be gone for 3 years. And
wow.
It was nice to see the good guys win once in a great while. I mean, I don't get any money out of it, but it's just, you know, I mean, we're moving in the direction of right and proper. But, you know, the bad news for me was, because I have a good friend who's a real expert in this piracy stuff, and I always told him it's the wrong thing. He says, no, we're going to do as long as we can. And my answer is, as long as you've got torrents running, and when you make it harder for torrents to be tracked, and anyone can steal things, what you're doing is you are giving the entertainment industry and the publishing industry and the software publishing industry the excuse they need to be as draconian as they possibly can. Because if you recall, copy protection was a big thing back in the early 80s. And there was a company Ashton Tate Software, who came out with a new version of DBase, I believe it was DBase 4, and they were so crazy about copy protection that they were suggesting that their next version, if it detected that you were trying to install a pirated copy off a floppy, that it would wipe your hard drive, it would format your hard drive. Well, they went too far. And that was the thing that put the stake through the heart of the copy protection that was making it impossible for legal buyers of software to actually get anything out of it. I mean, if you bought an Ashton Tate or a Lotus product, you had about a 1 in 10 chance of getting a bad floppy, so you couldn't even install the blasted thing after having paid $500 for it.
Well, copy protection has always punished the legitimate owner. The pirates invariably can hack around it.
Well, there was some hard stuff. I'm saying that was the straw that broke the camel's back in the public software buying public eye, where they said, you know what, no copy protection. And for over a decade, I must say 12, 13 years, copy protection is largely gone. And to this day, we still see a bit of it. You know, we still see that a lot of that stuff's kind of gone. People try to use more and more legitimate ways. The problem, though, is this: is now that you know. What I'm seeing in the music world, in the movie world, in the ebook world, what I'm seeing now is once the publishers start feeling comfortable, they start jacking the prices like crazy.
Sure.
I mean, there are books, you know, when a book was a hardcover and it was $24 and you want $22 for the ebook because you can, that's just wrong. And that's speaking as a guy who makes his living doing book royalties, you know. Making whatever book royalties that I can. So it's funny, in the last couple of years, I've kind of come along to the point of view that, along the lines of what you're saying, that there's actually a minorly positive thing about the pirates, because as long as a copy protection can be cracked, then the publishers are a little more reasonable, I guess. It's sort of like what we've seen, and I'm not sure this is true, because I don't watch a lot of TV, but I notice that there's a lot of TV shows now that you can grab on Amazon or something like that.
Yep.
For $1 or $2 an episode. And when I talk to people about it, they say, yeah, you know, it's going to put the torrents out of business. And I say, well, why? They say, well, I used to steal the episodes these guys are telling me off the torrents. Hey, but for $1, $1.50, it's not worth it.
Yeah, if you reduce the friction enough, people will go the legitimate route.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've got to reduce the friction. And I think the pressure that the pirates are putting on is actually... You know, for a while there, it was an escalation of an arms race. But now it's switched over to, you need to innovate your model.
Right, right, exactly. So that's been quite interesting, you know.
Hey, Mark, I think that's a show.
Oh, well, in that case. Richard, congratulations on your 300th, my friend, and I hope that I'll be back for the 3,000th.
Well, if we get to 3,000, I think we're going to be somewhat older.
We'll just be doing it more often, Richard. And besides, you know, I don't know about for you, but, you know, my country is embarking on getting a better and better healthcare system. And so I plan to be here for a good long time, living in a different country. So
we'll have the Canadian versus U.S. healthcare system discussion on a different show.
I wouldn't be smart enough to speak about either one, my friend.
Very good. Thanks so much for coming on.
Take care, pal.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.